morning, 7:38, News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us at this time every Thursday is somebody from PPD. Typically, it is Pensacola Police Department Public Information Officer. That's all six words. It's a good acronym. Mike Wood, he is with PPD and joins us. Mike, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. Maybe a bit unintentionally appropriate or ironic that I would mention that lengthy title, because the first question, I kind of know the answer, but anything happened the last couple of days that we don't already know about?
No, sir. It's been uneventful.
Perfect. Nice talking to you, Mike. Thanks for the work. I appreciate the time. but I do have other questions since there have not been, and I'm always glad to hear it, that there have not been any major incidents. I'll take that. First question is, the renaming of Bayfront to Pensacola Police Fallen Heroes Highway. I had originally thought, and maybe I think a lot of people thought this, that it was going to be purely a memorial designation, like it would be Bayfront still, but it would have those signs up. And when I talked to Alex Andrade the other day, he expressed to me that no, it was actually a name change for the entire stretch, that it's just no longer going to be Bayfront on July 1st. You guys are the ones that the road is going to be named after. Thoughts on this name?
Well, it's an honor to have our fallen officers honored like that with a name change, and that's certainly not something that we applied for or that we asked for, but it's an honor that someone did think of it and then wants to do that for us. But we don't usually get into the naming of streets or things like that. Just not something that we normally do. But once again, it's an honor to have that happen.
Very good. And as I've said, same sentiment. The practicality of it is the part to me that, you know, are people going to say that? What's the size of the street sign going to be and all that? And alternatives that might have accomplished the same thing without having been quite such a long name. The other question I had for you is just on kind of the other side of town. Cervantes, as you well know, is undergoing massive reconstructive surgery right now. We are putting concrete barriers. In fact, those are in a lot, and there's the fencing is up, what I've called the border wall fencing is up. A lot of intersections have been closed. First question, since that's been going on for a couple of months, have you seen any change in the number of incidents, particularly any crashes related to the construction, or have you seen any pedestrian interactions that, because typically we have some of those, which is why the stuff is being done in the first place. Have you seen any changes even in the early phases of construction being done?
Yeah, we haven't had the speeding issues that we used to have, and we haven't had a pedestrian versus vehicle accident since construction began. So it's so far so good with that project. And again, the diet or the designing of roadways is not something that we get into. But to answer your question, so far so good with that area as far as speeding and crashes with pedestrians.
One question that I had that I know was an initial uncertainty was first responder ease of access, because we were closing, and there have been intersections now closed off where you cannot get into those. They put concrete barriers up in those areas, and the addition of a couple of traffic lights that I think are not quite online yet, if I remember correctly from the other day. Is that changing anything for you guys in terms of response time or operationally? Is that having effect on you at all?
No, not really. The officers work what we call beats or areas, and they work the same one every day. They're aware of closures in their area, and they've already got it in their heads how to get around that area to go from point A to point B as quickly as normal. So that really doesn't affect us.
Okay, fair enough. You and I were kind of talking about this a little bit before we came on the air, and it turns out that a story I wanted to ask you about was actually going to be your cop myth for the day, so we're kind of doing double duty here, which is fine. I don't know if you saw this story about the Delaware State lacrosse team. Now, Delaware State is a historically black college university, and their women's lacrosse team was traveling to Florida to play in a tournament, and then they were going home to Delaware. And while they were going through Georgia, they got pulled over. The bus got pulled over. The cop said that the guy was inappropriately traveling in the left-hand lane. He said he was passing, and so it was allowed. So it was a relatively minor, perhaps not even a justified traffic stop. That to the side, once they were pulled over, the police officers decided to search the bus, including the personal possessions of the female lacrosse players. There's been allegations that this is race-related, not just don't even want to talk about that. I don't know. But it seemed to me like they went way beyond the normal mandate in inspecting people's bags underneath in the compartment, even forcing a woman to open up her gift that she had gotten from a relative. They said it was because there's trafficking through that corridor, because there's drug going through that corridor. They were justified. What are the rules? Like, when you get a traffic stop, what can you do? What do the police, what are you justified in doing? And how do those rules change as things you find change?
Well, first of all, if it's traffic related, the only thing that matters is the driver of that vehicle. If they made an error and broke a law or broke a traffic law, then that's what you concentrate on, is them, not the passengers inside. But, you know, so sometimes one thing leads to another. If you stop a vehicle and then you smell narcotics, or there's someone in there that you recognize that has a warrant, there's a number of things that could happen from that point on once the stop is made to make the stop go further and involve other people. So, you know, it's like a person walking on the side of the road, and that's what we were going to get into about the myth. You know, a lot of people say that we have to have a warrant to stop someone who's merely walking or riding a bicycle, and to especially to search them. And sometimes that's true. So we have to have a reason, and there's case law behind that. It's called Terry versus Ohio. We call it a Terry stop, and all officers are taught that in the police academy. You have to have a reason to stop someone. So someone walking down Garden Street, let's say, or maybe riding a bicycle at 2 a.m., just to stop them because it's 2 a.m., the answer is no. But was there a burglary call that just came out in that area? Then the answer becomes yes, because you want to check people in the area that you see coming and going from that crime scene.
And I know you're going to laugh at this term, but is suspicious walking grounds to stop somebody? You know, I just look sketchy, or I'm walking nervously or erratically, or, you know, like, it seems to me like that would not be grounds, but you tell me, you're the cop, you know the law better than I do.
No. So if the person is just walking, there has been no crime in the area, or they're riding a bicycle, the answer to your question is no. But if that person is riding a bicycle and pulling a lawnmower behind him, or another bicycle, or he's walking with a television in his hand, that changes things. That arouses the officer's suspicion, and he's going to, or she is going to, stop that person and investigate further.
All right, very good. And back to the original question, the one about drug searches. A traffic stop is going to be focused on the driver. That wouldn't normally justify the searching of the passengers or of the vehicle, unless there was some other reason, like the smell of marijuana was clear, and it's always allowed to have a canine come to the outside of the vehicle, right, in order to just to inspect. That's allowed, right?
Well, it is, but again, they need a reason. They need something more than just, you know what, we're bored, the canine is close, let's get the canine over here to walk around that vehicle. There has to be a little bit more. You have to articulate just a little bit more before you do that.
Oh, okay. So having the canine around the outside is not automatically justified simply on the basis of having a traffic stop. Even if the canine's in your own vehicle, you'd have to have some kind of an explanation for that. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Even if it was just an area that is known for the trafficking of narcotics, high trafficking area, then that right there is enough. And depending on the time of day and things like that, so there has to be just a little bit more than the officer just wants to have the dog walk around the vehicle.
I know a question a lot of people will have about this issue of searches in their cars, especially, is when can a person refuse a search? You know, if you ask a search and they say yes, all good, but if they say no, when are they allowed to say no legally?
Anytime you want to. You can deny the officer the search, and if the officer has probable cause to search that vehicle, then they will hold that vehicle and go get a search warrant if it's something that serious. But you know, if a person is arrested out of that vehicle, then they have the right to search the immediate area where that person was sitting. They also have the right to search the person's clothing once they make an arrest, whereas before the arrest, all they could do is maybe look for bulges in waistbands or pockets for possibly weapons and pat down the outside of the clothing. But once an arrest is made, that changes everything.
Okay, and that would all have to do, I assume, you correct me if I'm wrong, plain view standards. If they discover something as it's sort of like a search incident to the traffic stop where they see evidence of something else, then they'd be justified. But if there's nothing like that, those are cases where the person can refuse the search, right?
Yes. You know, a person can always consent. An officer can ask, do you mind if I search your vehicle? Do you mind if I look under your seat? The person can always give consent, or they can deny. That's a right that they have.
Very good. Well, that's what I wanted to ask, because, I mean, this is stuff that comes up fairly often, and it's important for people to know what their rights are. You know, one of the things that I think it was Tommy Leiter, back when he was a chief, and we were talking about protests downtown, and he made a comment that I just think we ought to say more often. He said that it was because they were policing the protest, okay, that had, I don't even remember what the particular was, but they were policing a protest, and he said, you know, cops are here to ensure your rights. You know, we're not on the other side of you trying to discourage your use of rights or take away your rights. Our job is literally to protect the Constitution and your constitutional rights within it, right, Mike?
Yeah, he's exactly right, and that's the way it is. We've had protests downtown many times, and it is our job to make sure people's voices are heard and to keep them safe and to keep those that may be in the area watching the protest safe as well.
Yeah, and it just, you know, I just think about that, is that sometimes we think of the police as being adversarial to our rights, but the police exist to protect them. That's the whole point. Mike Wood, Public Information Officer for PPD. Mike, thank you so much for the time, sir. I always appreciate it, and the work you do to keep us safe.
Thank you.